Miss any of the show? You can get Sheeman and Shepherd all the time with Sheeman and Shepherd On Demand. Available on 99.3ESPN.com and iTunes. This is Sheeman and Shepherd.
Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Speaking of heat at the moment, there we go. On cue, Asia.
It's pretty good.
I was running out of ideas, Pete, so thanks.
Rick Church on the other side of the glass as Chris is away on sabbatical. Be back sometime between now and Christmas. I don't know. Or next week. I don't know. We've got Jeb Nixon in studio. Our local golfer, of course, the head golf pro at Stony Brook. He's here. Also, you can hear him every Sunday on this station with Play Golf Southwest Florida from 8 to 10. He and Andy Scott. He's with us in person. Does Rick play this bumper music for your show on Sunday mornings?
We actually have music kind of picked out, and we've been running for a couple of years now.
I was going to say, tell him, Jeff. Jeff picks the music for the golf show.
Yeah.
Got like a tight rotation? You don't let him vary?
Yours is a show Rick that plays Titanic? What's the song that plays?
No, we don't play Titanic.
No,
That's the fishing show. The sinking boat.
No, I hear music. I get the music mixed up.
Yeah, we play a little Sinatra, little Pearl Jam.
Louis Armstrong. Yeah.
Wow. Don't talk to the side of that microphone. You've got to go right into it.
There you go.
There you are. Look at that.
Bellacious tones. How about that? Yeah, so you have a pretty tight grip on the music selection of your show? You don't let Rick variate or anything like that?
No, we keep it kind of the same. You know, like, I ask Andy... what do you think? And I got crickets, kind of like Brooks Koepka gave to Tiger.
Right.
So I said, okay, I'll pick it. And I picked all the music, and we've kind of stuck with it for a couple of years. Time for a change, probably. I've been kind of thinking about the changes.
It's consistent. You know what I'm saying? It's recognizable.
I wanted to ask you, just real quick, amateur-wise or amateur/pro-wise, this past week with the Florida Open our guy Mike Welch is great. At our place at Benita National, he did really well. And Andrew Filbert, who used to be at our place, is another place. He did pretty well. Do you know anybody? They get some money out of it.
Yeah, it was a nice little paycheck. Pretty cool thing for Andrew. And Andrew's a great player.
Yeah,
and good players.
Mike is
Mike's
good,
good player. Yeah. I mean, they're Florida Open's hard to get in. I mean, it's difficult. Mm-hmm. I was there one year at Renaissance, shot 74, poking my chest out, walking around. I wasn't even in the. I didn't even get a sniff. I mean, come on. So, you got to be under par to qualify to get in it. And then
I take a 74.
Jeez. Yeah, I was real proud of it, but not so much.
No, that's great. That's fantastic. What do you have to do to qualify for? I mean, how do you get? First of all, you have to be a registered PGA or PGA pro. Or
they qualify just plain mini tour players, PGA professionals, and amateurs. I mean, you just. You had to have a certain handicap. I can't. It's been a long time since I did it. Since I became a junior golf guru, I don't play much golf anymore. I watch little kids play golf.
Well, that's
just kind of fun.
That's great.
Well, we were talking earlier about whether because it's media days for the SEC and the ACC, and we're talking about whether these kids that play football at the highest level actually have fun working for taskmasters like Nick Saban and company. We know a lot of people were texting in about their practice conditions and. Practicing in a high school or a D1 or whatever here in the state of Florida, you do the same thing. You got kids out there. You got to get creative and help them practice out in golf after school at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, August, September at Bishop Vero.
Yeah,
it's a little toasty out there.
Yeah, it's a little warm. We try to do stuff to keep them energized. And this year we're adding in a scrimmage, boys versus girls, every Thursday, because me and Andy found Andy Scott, who's a boys coach. We found that they get the most engaged when they would scrimmage.
Yeah.
So we're working that in. We're just trying anything to get them ready and prepared for districts, regional, and state. I mean, that's the biggest thing.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you about a little bit about the British Open. Now, Pete has called me a golf snob because I know they invented golf over there. I know these are the oldest golf courses in the world and all the history when you get to the British Open, or excuse me, the Open. Or the Open Championship. But I'm sorry. I like a nice, green, beautiful Augusta National. I'll take it over those wheat fields that they play on over there and roll the ball around any day of the week.
Oh, come on now. The biggest savior for golf in America, I mean, we were talking economics here, would be if we had more golf courses like St. Andrews.
Yes.
Like these golf courses.
Now, why? Why do you say that?
Well,
it's cheaper.
First off, how expensive do you think water is going to get in the next 25 years in Florida? And fertilization and all these. It's cheaper to maintain a golf course like that.
Yeah, but it looks like crap over there.
I mean, you know, the eventuality will be we won't be able to afford golf. I mean, the Scots, to me, they got it right. And, you know, like, they go out and play when the wind's raining and awful. And, I mean, they're true believers. The Scots are true believers, man. They love golf.
I try to tell this man across from you.
Don't get me wrong. I love Augusta. Yeah. That's my heart and soul. That's where I got my passion for the game was getting taken to Augusta as a kid.
That's right, because it was beautiful.
Well, yeah, but that's not realistic. That's 40 billionaires that are members or more.
Yeah.
And they got unlimited funds and they, you know, everything. I mean,
they don't use the course, 6 months out of the year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, they put funeral tents over the greens, for God's sakes. I mean, it's so pampered. And, you know, like, I always hated the week after the Masters because, you know, like, for us in Florida, we were coming in a transition where the grass is kind of transitioned.
Yeah.
So we get a little off color. There's a little bit of drought. And all the members would watch Augusta. Oh, I can't be as green like Augusta here.
I'm not that much of a snob. Look, I've played Stony Brook. It's beautiful. It's prettier at Stony Brook than watching all this wheat field they're playing on over there across the pond.
Well, beauty is in the eye of the beholder,
my
friend. Oh,
not in this beholder.
You do realize people pay thousands of dollars in plane fares and hotels and green fees to go play those wheat fields, as you call them.
Imagine Craig walking into Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland. I'm Craig Sheeman, and your golf course is a disgrace.
Fact!
Wrong!
You need a weed eater.
Exactly.
And I keep telling him, think about how many extra yards you get off your drive on a links course or courses like
Absolutely.
This. 40, 50 yards. That's huge.
Yeah, but everybody else is getting it, too.
I don't care about everybody
else.
It
doesn't help me.
Anyway, well, let's get into Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland. And I think they had a record, 227,000. There's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
Maybe they can stamp down all that wheat.
A lot of people going to be there. Tiger Woods seeking to become the oldest player. He's won multiple majors in the same year. Koepka trying to become the first player in the Masters since 1934 to record 5 consecutive top 2 finishes in majors. Let's just start with him before we get into his practice schedule. Of what we know and what we don't know, and you have some insight to it. But Brooks, Tiger, those two, let's start with them. How do you think they're both going to fare this week? Tiger saying yesterday that he has not gotten his game back into Masters.
Mailing it in since the Masters.
I think maybe a top 25 would be a realistic goal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he makes the cut, but I don't think he's in contention.
Yeah.
Koepka's going to win.
Going to win?
Yeah.
Going to win.
And that concludes the appearance by Jeff Nixon as we preview the British Open on Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN.
So you've got some insight into him.
Well, let me set this up properly. So, because this is a funny part, and then it's the follow-up. This is Tiger Woods in his press conference the other day, given the story how he called up or texted up Brooks Koepka, wanted to get a practice round with him semi-recently, and Koepka blew him off. Let's take a listen. This is Tiger Woods.
Tell you a funny story. I texted Brooksy, you know, congratulations on another great finish. What he's done in the last 4 major championships and has been just unbelievable. He'd be so consistent, so solid, so he's been in contention to win, you know, each and every major championship. And I said, hey, dude, you know, you mind if I, you know, tag along and play a practice round? I've heard nothing.
All right, so he ghosted him there. Now, first of all, let's take that. First of all, you think obviously there's some gamesmanship here, and Koepka doesn't want him hanging around him, or what? I don't know what their friendship situation is.
Oh, I think I've heard that they're fairly friendly. I would say it's got to do with the caddy. He doesn't want him getting, you know, because Tiger's known for absorbing information and grabbing information and. And, you know, he don't want him clamming onto his caddy and learning more about the golf course. I'm not going to give him an advantage.
Right, because Tiger's never seen this golf course till this week.
Right, and Koepka's caddy's a member there.
Okay.
And that's why I say he's going to win, because you got the best player in the world, and you put him with a guy with unlimited knowledge of the golf course. How can he lose?
All right, now that's good information.
Yeah.
Now, let's go to Brooks Koepka. He was asked about this after Tiger let this cat out of the bag. Here was Brooks Koepka's response.
I just practiced before the majors. Regular tournaments, I don't practice. When, if you see me on TV, that's when I play golf.
Now, I'd say he's joking around, calling BS. Pete says he believes him that he never practices. I said, you cannot be a pro golfer and never practice.
I said to this, Jeff, this is what I really said. I said, say if you played last week at the John Deere Classic, which, by the way, is a shame that that tournament had to come the week before. That used to be a pretty good tournament. That was like, you couldn't, except for Charles Howell III. I didn't know hardly anybody in that. Say he did play last week. How many hours you think he would have put in before that tournament? And I'm not talking, you know, whether it would it just be a couple hours before he teed off on Thursday, or would it be Tuesday or when? I mean, how many hours of practice before that tournament or any non-major do you think he puts in a week?
You know, it's hard to say. The reputation or the stories he always heard about Brooks was multi-talented, wanted to be a baseball player, didn't really like golf that much, but was really good at it, and then kind of found his wings at Florida State and decided he wanted to make a professional career out of it. I would imagine he's being perfectly honest that he comes out on Wednesday when he's got to play his mandatory pro-am round, plays his pro-am, plays in the golf tournament, and that's about it on a regular tour event, and you see the results. I think on majors, he starts grinding probably 10 days out, grinds the whole time till he gets there, and he plays, and you see the results there. I don't think he's a guy, you know, like, I think he likes golf and he likes what golf gives him, but I don't think he's like Tiger Woods, where Tiger Woods, in his prime, loved golf.
Yeah.
He was so infatuated with the finiteness of details. That's what made him great. Koepka's a great athlete who can play golf, but I don't know that he's in love with golf. I don't know that you'd find Brooks Koepka watching golf when he's not playing in it.
No, and there are a lot of athletes and a lot of sports that are like that. But say if he was playing, say he played in the John Deere Classic last week on that Thursday. Say his tee off time. Say you get an 8:05. What time do you think he's out there warming up?
Oh, I think he maintains his regular schedule of warming up.
What's the average for most golfers for that? You'd say
An hour and a half to 2 hours. Okay. I mean, depending on if he's going to work out before, he's probably going to get up like at 5 and work out and stretch. And then hit the course about an hour and a half to 2 hours before, putt, hit the range, chip, putt right before he goes out.
Do you think it's ridiculous that he works out, lifts weights the way he does even before a round? I mean, most guys wouldn't do that, right? I mean, your arms would be getting the shakes before you even play.
The guy's won four.
Majors. Do you find that amazing?
I find it interesting way golf's changed. I mean, when I was a kid, you didn't, like you were told not to lift weights. Stay out, we'll be as, you want to try to be as lean, which wasn't good
nimble.
For me.
You like know, we but, are.
You didn't want to lift weights and you didn't want to bulk up because you wanted to have flexibility.
Baseball players, too, they used to say that on the whole, don't lift a lot of weights. You want to be able to swing. You don't want to. And
that's all changed. Yeah. Tiger changed that. I mean, Greg Norman did to some extent, but Greg Norman's got more of a swimmer's body.
Yeah.
Tiger was like a little ripped, like a defensive back at one point.
Yeah.
And, Koepka comes along. This guy's a linebacker.
Mm-hmm. Now,
I mean, he's a beast.
Yeah.
Now, when these guys, when you say they grind it before a major or whatever, and I know Tiger has his three holes in his backyard or whatever, what's an average? I mean, is it 7 hours a day out there? What is it?
For Tiger Woods, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
7-8 hours. And I think I've seen on Facebook and a couple different outlets his schedule, what it looks like. Stretch, workout, hit balls, chip, putt, play 9 holes, work on what went wrong in the 9 holes, and then go back and play 9 more. And that's 7-8 hours.
Wow.
And we got a tweet from somebody, a text, and sounds about right about Vijay Singh. You have a story about that too. Hits at least 1,000 balls a day. Our man from Fiji, who's still, I think, playing really. Man, if there's a definition of consistent, that man, I love his swing. I always have, and his demeanor, and he just seems
he's a hard worker.
Nothing bothers him. You know, he's just such a sweet swing.
I gave you the Vijay story.
Yeah,
I got it from a tour caddy friend of mine. So Vijay goes out early, barely makes the cut in the Players Championship. Sunday, he's in the first group out, outplayed. George McNeil playing in the event. He's fairly late. I mean, he's in the last four or five groups. And so when they go to 1, 2, 3 at TPC, it's right by the range. Vijay's in a practice bunker hitting shots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big pail of balls.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They play, they finish. He's still in the bunker. George goes in, signs his card, has a couple of beverages, comes mm-hmm. back out. Vijay's still in the bunker.
My really? God.
So he had played 18 holes
wow.
and then spent another 4 to 6 hours hitting fairway bunker shots.
That is unbelievable. And then, now, the other story that came out earlier this week, which I think is going to be fairly interesting to see how he plays. Phil Mickelson hasn't eaten, apparently, for 6 days. He's fasting.
Fasting.
What the, I mean, come on.
He needed to reset his
body. He's juicing. He's juicing.
He's so California.
How is it? Not eating, I don't care. These juicing people, I think you're wrong. Not eating is not a good way to lose weight.
Oh, no.
You can cleanse for a day or something like that. But how do you think that whole routine is going to affect him this week?
Who knows? I mean, who does that? Who goes without
eating? I can't fast for 6 minutes.
Yeah. Well, it's like what's the longest period you ever went without food? I mean, you know, like
maybe 18 hours.
Before my colonoscopy, and it was hell.
Well, that.
Yeah.
That, you're right.
But, you know, 6 days he doesn't eat and he just drinks. He's, oh,
said he had
Lord.
To lose, what, 16 pounds or something like that?
I guarantee you put that back on as soon as you're starting because your metabolism shot.
Half of it's fluid.
Then you had to travel to Europe.
Get dehydrated on the flight. I mean, he's going to be a mess.
Watch him
be a winner.
He'll probably win. I mean, who knows? I mean, he's so odd sometimes, and it's so and you got to love his Twitter and his.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean,
very
it's,
active on
it's
Twitter.
It's great. He's funny.
Gives you a lot of behind the scenes mm-hmm. stuff on Twitter.
Like. I'm not a fan of Mickelson. I played junior golf in the same era as Mickelson. Mm-hmm. I knew Phil when he was 17, 16 years old. He was a jerk.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's done really well for himself. I mean. 25 years in the top 50 in the world? That's crazy.
I mean, I respect his game tremendously. I think we've had this conversation before on and off the air. I don't like him. I just don't like him. I think he has this fake halo above his head. I don't know how it got there.
He's a putz.
But I've heard too many stories and too many things, and I'm like, yeah.
I think we need some stories. What you said, you've known him since he was 17.
I think Jeff summed it up. He's a jerk.
No, I want a story.
I think a lot of players can be jerks.
I want 17-year-old Jeff and 17-year-old Phil Mickelson. First
off, I mean, you know, we were far apart in talent level. He goes to Arizona State. I go straight to the mini tours. I mean, I didn't even go play college golf, but. Point being, he would be on the range talking to himself. He was so strange and odd, and he'd have his collar up, and you know, and his hair is all floofed, and he just thought he was a tour player on the AJGA tour, yeah. American Junior Golf Association. And a couple times I ran across him, you know, that's what I get. Like he was so much more talented. I remember he played in front of me because you go out in alphabetical order.
Yeah.
So him in, you know, he's in front of me.
Right.
And we're playing, I forget, I think it was in North Carolina, and he hit it all over the place. And I'm like, what is this guy?
Yeah.
And I hit it okay, and I think I shot 76 or 77. This kid comes in with 65.
Wow.
And he hit it all over the place.
That's what he does now.
None of that's ever changed, but he walked around. He had that walk, you know. And I just thought, what a.
I think he was betting big every hole back then.
There were stories.
Right. Yeah.
As a teenager?
There were stories. Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bit of a problem.
When he flew all over the country for free because his father was an airline pilot,
that's
and he
right.
set up his own arrangements, and he treated the AJGA like it was a professional tour. Like he was. When he went on and played professional golf, when he played PGA Tour, he was already ready.
Yeah.
Travel was no big deal for him. He'd done it.
Wow.
How about Rory McIlroy? Top five finishes in each of the last four starts of the Open. Now he's in his home country. Got to be sure the crowd is going to be very much behind him. There's a lot of pressure on him this week.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure on him. I'm pulling for him. Mm-hmm. I like Rory McIlroy. I think he's seems like a genuinely good guy. Mm-hmm. He's very honest, and I'm pulling for him. It'd be a great win. If he won in Ireland, the country would go crazy.
Yeah.
Does he cave under the hometown pressure, though?
Yeah, he might.
Because he's admitted, he, you know, at least back in the day, he used to get a little, get inside his ears a little bit on these big events. Yeah, this one's in his backyard.
I know he wants this really bad, so we'll see what happens.
He's posted 10 rounds in the 60s at the Open since 2014, second most behind Jordan Spieth's 11. Wow. So, like you said, if he doesn't let the hometown pressure get to him, I mean, you got to, if he's in contention going into Sunday morning around here, late morning, early afternoon, that's going to be a lot
of fun. So, you got 230,000 people there. They'll all be following his group. You know, it'll be straight madness, is what it'll be. It'll be crazy.
It's the most they had, let me pull up, 237,750 record attendance outside of St. Andrews.
Now put that in perspective for me. At Augusta, what do they squeeze into there? 50,000?
50,000 and some change.
Five times. Okay.
And let me tell you, I get claustrophobic with the 50,000.
Yeah.
You go into like the merchandise tent, and it's like, it's like standing in a line to go to ride a ride at Disney. Sure. You know, like to buy something, you got to stand in a line for 15 minutes.
But this is the scenery at Royal Portrush. Oh my God, it is absolutely stunning.
Oh, it's beautiful.
The hills and the landscaping and everything else and the fescue and all that.
The wheat.
I want to ask, I want to get into some more specifics about the course maybe when we come back. And
all right. We've got Jeff Nixon in studio. If you've got any questions about the Open, golfers, local golf, it's all on the table. And don't forget, next hour, we're going to ask you all to go to our website at 993ESPN.com between now and then and sign up for the Scheman and Shepherd Fantasy Golf Game. We're going to make our picks. If you have some questions about some golfers, right now, take advantage of it now with Jeff Nixon in studio.
Jeff also has Georgia winning the SEC.
Yes, he does.
Again.
Absolutely.
Go Dogs. 239-337-ESPN, 239-337-3776. It's Scheman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
One of them thinks cooking is cool. The other thinks white tube socks are. This is Scheman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Scheman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app. In studio, Jeff Nixon, friend of the program, head golf pro at Stony Brook Golf Club, and also play golf Southwest Florida 8 to 10 every Sunday with Andy Scott right here in this studio on this station. Check it out if you haven't. Most of you already do if you love golf. We'll talk about the British Open. If you want to chime in with a question of your own, whether it be the British Open or local golf here, 239-337-ESPN, 239-337-3776.
Maybe Jeff knows the answer to this. So it's the 148th. quote-unquote, Open Championship. I still say British Open. I don't care. Only the second time, though, being held at Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland. Why is that? Politics? Or
yeah, and the troubles?
What troubles? In Northern Ireland? No.
Yeah. It should be war-torn back in the day.
Yeah. 1951 was the last time they were there.
Being facetious. Wow. And that's but we've seen other politicized sporting events. It's kind of amazing to me that it's taken only the second time it's going to be. This course looks beautiful, and I don't know much about it except for the pictures I've seen. I don't know how much you probably know more about it, but what separates this from, like, St. Andrews, say?
Well, I mean, it's a little bit different track than St. Andrews. You know, St. Andrews is a little more open in comparison. This is a little more narrow, a little more tricky, more dog legs. You know, it's a great, great golf course. I mean, it hasn't been on the rotation since 1951. Now it's come back. After, Northern Ireland's back. And, I haven't personally gone to Northern Ireland, but I know a ton of people who have gone to Northern Ireland on trips, and they rave about the golf course. So I think we're going to be really enjoying this weekend's golf.
With nobody talking about Jordan Spieth or DJ or anybody like that, any thoughts on their games at this point going into this?
Well, you know, Spieth is, who knows, the whole U.S. Open, I hit the rake thing.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Oh, did we talk? We have to talk to you. Finish what you thought. They're not going to ask you a specific question about that.
And then DJ's highly capable of winning this week. I mean, he's a great player. If he putts well, he'll win. That's the bottom line. I mean, he's going to drive
only
the ball
25.
Well.
I think he turns 26 at the end of the week. But
Spieth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's getting old now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's aging.
So what do you want to ask about the
rake? So we're watching it, and when he hit it, we're sitting there, we're doing like play-by-play, probably a little later, but anyway. But we didn't see the rake. I'm wondering, I know the caddy's job is to make sure everything is clear, but that thing was buried.
Keep in mind, he and his caddy were not getting along that week.
I know, I know. That was like the third little tiff there. But if that were you, Jeff, would you have blamed your caddy for that?
No, I mean, I got to see that. You know, you're the player. I mean, ultimately, the caddy's there to assist. Club, yardage, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you know, you can say, well, it's a caddy's job. Like, and Faxon jumped on it. Oh, it's a caddy's job. Yeah. I mean, come on, man. You're the player. You look, he hit a bad shot. I mean, let's be honest. Yeah. He didn't hit a great shot.
No.
He hit a rake. Boof, boo-hoo. Oh, hit a rake. There's a rake there. I mean, he's like freaking out.
Another thing about, and we say this, we say it every week, but in majors particularly, and particularly at the Open, I think weather is absolutely a factor, right? A lot of times it can be, especially teeing off morning as opposed to mid-afternoon, and it can make all the difference in the world. Forget Saturday and Sunday, just making the cut.
Yep. I mean, you look a couple years ago when Louis Oosthuizen, I think this is 2010, Louis Oosthuizen wins the British Open. And to me, he clearly won the British Open because he got the good draw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He got, I think it was afternoon, morning, and in the afternoon on Friday, a storm blows in. Rory shoots 65-80, mm-hmm. makes the cut, and then almost comes back and wins the golf tournament. But if he had had the draw that Oosthuizen won, he would have probably won the tournament.
Mm. Yes, I mean, now what about as far as a lot of these, and this is considered a links course, right?
Yes.
So will guys be tempted more on some of the longer holes to use driver? Because I know some of these par fours, some of these guys can come close to driving the green if they don't anyway. Or will they, because of the extra roll you get if you hit it properly in the fairway, or will they back off, you think?
Well, it depends on the wind, and it also depends on the fescue, is how punitive it is. You know, it's been fairly wet over there, I think, so the fescue is going to be fairly punitive. So I think you're going to see a lot of irons. You're going to see driver on occasion. They're going to take some risk when they need to, when they think they can. I mean, but, it's going to be the one thing that the Open Championship does, or the British Open, is it brings back the shorter player into play. If you see Spieth 11 rounds under par, you know, there's a reason for that, because you get so much roll and it's a little bit more, you got to kind of aim your ball and play shots and curve the ball. I think that's a lot of people say, well, Tiger, you know, Tiger is a good pick because no one works the ball quite like Tiger. But, you know, how can you go without playing golf and expect to go to a major and win?
Do they got a lot of crazy bunkers, corkscrew bunkers over there at this course?
It looks like it.
Well, I'm looking at a thing right now, and back in 1951, the last time it was here in Northern Ireland, 18th hole is called Babington. And I guess I should have heard of this shot. I really haven't until I'm seeing this. Max Faulkner, 1951, hit what has been described, which I'm sure we'll see this week, as the greatest shot ever seen from the right rough on his way to the Open title. There's a couple of pop, but they don't show the shot, but they show, of course, I can only imagine. Is the fescue any different, like, say, from there to some other courses, whether it be on Long Island or in the Midwest or anything like that?
Well, you probably got more fertilizer going down on those golf courses, so the fescue could be a little thicker. But, you know, here's the thing. That fescue's been there for how many years? I mean,
Roots.
It's got roots, man. It's tough. It's going to be a tough golf course.
I saw that U.S. Open champion Gary Woodland, I guess his wife is on bed rest expecting twins. He decided he's going to go ahead and play. That'd be a bit of a distraction, wouldn't it? Or once you get there, you kind of put that behind
you. Oh, yeah. You know, absolutely. If, you know, Phil famously lost to Payne Stewart when Amy was on bed rest waiting for, and the kid was born like the next day.
Yeah.
And he famously said he had a pager. If a pager went off, it didn't no matter where he was in the tournament, he was gone.
Right.
So, you know, for Gary, I know, you know, they had issues. He wound up losing the kid last time. So I know it's probably a lot on his mind.
Yeah, no doubt.
There's another hole called Calamity Corner on the 16. And
Calamity Jane.
Yeah, Calamity Jane. And the deal is it's a par 3. Described so treacherous that Bobby Locke decided to intentionally aim left of the green in 1951. He got up and down for par successfully in all four rounds. So the green looks like the size of New England. I mean, it's huge.
Bobby Locke, maybe the greatest putter in the history of the game, who hooked his putts.
Really?
Famously. There's a hole in New England I played up there at Shinnecassa in Groton, Connecticut.
Groton, Connecticut.
And they call it the world's shortest par five. And it's a par three, like the Pfizer buildings are here. Uh-huh. You go up the hill and the green's like this and two-tiered and it sits like this. Which, that's great radio, Nixon. You're waving your hands up and down. But anyway.
I thought you were directing the thunder that's bashing ahead of us.
Yeah. It's a super difficult hole, and I would assume that's probably similar. I mean, there's par threes can be some of the most difficult holes in golf, period. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I
can
know.
Vouch for that. I'm going to take a little bit of a left turn on here because it's something I just want to ask you about. This past weekend, the celebrity golf tournament out at Lake Tahoe, Tony Romo won. I used to go cover that event, and I had a blast. Have you ever been to it or played there?
No, I never been to Tahoe.
It's one of the it's a must-do. It's one of the greatest sporting events.
It looks like fun.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's fun. You got some of the biggest names out there. It is absolutely gorgeous. Everything you see on TV, multiply it by 10 with the blue water and the green. It's unbelievable.
That's what makes golf great to me. Like, golf is a sport that other athletes play, and it kind of transcends other sports at times. You know, like, you can have a golf tournament where you're showing Tony Romo win and and Carlton from The Fresh Prince and, you know, all kinds of people.
He's good.
It transcends a lot. I mean, some of my best friends who I never knew, I met on the golf course. I mean, that's just the way. That's why it's a great sport. And I tell people who say they're not very good, I don't want to play. I'm like, just get out there and have fun. No one's expecting you to shoot 70.
I got a little left turn story.
Okay.
Every time I come here, you guys play that bumper with the white tube socks.
Yes.
It always cracks me up. And I hear it when I'm driving, and it cracks me up. The first time I ever played golf with my radio partner, Andy Scott, he was from Kentucky, and he showed up to Fort Myers Country Club with tube socks right below the knee. And I looked at him, and I go, what are you doing? I got my socks on, man. My legs will get burned. I'm like, you got to get the shorty socks in Florida, man. You can't wear those.
He doesn't. Craig doesn't.
I don't have stripes on them or anything.
No, but
actually, it was fun. This all started because I'm a sock guy. I wear socks. And we all took a picture playing golf, and we posted on Twitter, and that's all everybody commented on, how ridiculous it was. It was at your golf course, by the way. I mean, that picture is at Stony Brook.
That's right. The only time I have long socks on is dress socks, if like when I was at a wedding a couple weeks ago.
Well, you don't wear pants, so I wear
pants twice a year. Here, down here, maybe. Yeah. No, I don't wear socks. I like golfing. I wear the golfy socks.
Ones, man
pads, whatever you want to call them.
Florida.
If we wore those socks back in the day when we went to high school or junior high, and gym, you'd get laughed at. Oh, you're wearing girly pads.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not that way anymore.
I need the socks. I got the hoodie on. Is the studio this cold for you on Sundays?
It's not that cold.
It can be. Yeah. It can be. It's a hanging meat. I often think we've walked into a freezer.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
But, I was outside all day. I mean,
probably feels good.
It feels great in here, but it could be cool in here at times.
A couple other questions. One about another local kid playing out there, Graham McDowell. And I don't see him a lot, but when I do see him, I feel like he's the kind of guy you want to root for. We talk about Rory McIlroy having a lot of pressure. What about Graham McDowell?
Yeah, he's got some pressure on him. I mean, he's a local kid, and he's played that golf course 150.
Yep.
You know, times or more, you know, and by the way, another great guy. I have friends that are friends with him, and they talk about how good a guy he is.
Yeah, so I was right.
He owns a restaurant in Orlando, and I've ate at it.
Does he?
Wonderful. Yeah.
Graham McDowell does.
Yes.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. So, you know, I would love to see Graham McDowell come back and win, because he's kind of been on a little bit of a downturn. He did win this year on an off-tour event. And he got himself qualified to play in this Open Championship, which he's over the moon about him. He's playing at home.
Yeah.
Another one that would be like, if he's in the final group's going to be like.
Absolutely.
230 screaming Irishmen.
Yeah.
They're going to dump Roy and go hang on to his.
He said, quote, you get, because of the 237, nearly 238,000 people, he's like, you get more of an idea for the size and the infrastructure that goes with this tournament. It's so enormous when you see it happening in your hometown.
If one of those guys win, they will sell more Guinness on Sunday than yeah. have ever been sold in the history of Guinness.
That's right.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we want to thank you for coming in. As always, with the final segment this hour, we play a stupid
unless you
want to
ha-
game. Unless you
want
to play Wikipedia.
Hang out with Wikipedia and Jeff,
you
want to
hang out with it?
Jeff, why not?
Jeff could be a lifeline for the
okay.
call. Not for me.
I like it.
We've had Jeff could be a lifeline for whoever caller number 9 is.
All right. So we'll do it.
And what's the genre today?
More like solar system. The 50-year anniversary of the moon landing is this week.
11.
So we're going to have space trivia today. We'll see how good your astronomy is. All that. We got Rick with his fun sack of prizes over there.
We're really trying to move these Rays tickets, by the way. We do have some golf passes for the Dunes on Sanibel Island, but we have tickets for the Rays on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday against the White Sox. So please.
The choice is yours.
Please take these take these Rays tickets.
Take my wife, please. Take my Rays, please.
You know how to sell it there, Rick. Good job. Caller number 9. Wikipedia, Stump Pete, Jeff Nixon in studio, 239-337-ESPN, 239-337-3776, Sheeman and Shepard, 99.3 ESPN, and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Think you got what it takes to stump the Shep? Shooter, shoot. And here's your shot. It's Wikipedia.
All right, here we go. Southwest Florida, time for our favorite game. Time to stump Pete Shepard and try and make him look foolish. We'll see how he does today.
Not difficult.
Not difficult. All right. Well, sometimes. Some days are different than others.
Yeah.
In honor of the 50-year anniversary of the moonshot, we've got more space trivia for you today. And we've got Jeff Nixon in studio. We may or may allow a lifeline. Caller number 9 is Jeff in Bonita. Jeff, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Jeff.
Good. How are you? Good. How you doing, guys?
Very
fantastic.
Good. How old are you, Jeff?
53.
All right. What do you do for a living?
I'm a plumber.
You're a plumber. Nice. Okay. Very good.
Well, yeah, 53. I remember it like it was yesterday when he landed on the moon.
Oh, very good. All right. Well, then you have a good shot at this. All right. You get to go first. First one to 3 correct answers wins. Your first question, Jeff, is how old is our universe?
Good God.
I'll let you round up to the billion.
How old is our universe?
Yeah. You learned it in 5th grade, man, long time ago.
No,
yeah.
You didn't.
Yeah, really
I did. My school. You were busy reading Shakespeare. I was busy learning
10,
the solar system.
10.
What's that?
10.
10. That would be incorrect. Pete Shepard, would you know how old it is?
How old the universe is?
Yeah, I thought this was fairly common knowledge.
3,000 years.
That's a stupid,
yes,
stupid
it is.
Answer.
Yes, it is.
Jeff Nixon, do you have a guess?
200 billion.
14 billion. Actually, 13.8 billion.
Says who?
Everybody.
Carl Sagan?
I win that one because I was the closest.
No, mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way.
No,
all right, Pete Shepard,
yeah.
Your first question.
I don't like this.
This one's a hard one.
Need Carl Sagan to answer the other one. He just said billions and billions.
I thought the first one was a layup. The second one is difficult. What percentage of the universe is considered dark matter? What percentage?
I'm going to say a little prayer against you.
This one's hard. This one's hard.
What percentage?
Wait a minute. Now,
this
how
is my question. Hold on, Jeff.
Question.
This is my question.
All right.
What? You have a chance to steal, Jeff, when I get this
all
wrong.
Right. Okay.
How? Say that again. How percentage?
What percentage of the universe is dark matter?
I got to channel every piece of Star Trek nerdiness I have, plus Star Wars. God. Oh, I'm trying to channel Spock here. I know this has probably come up. Maybe Data.
Throw out a number.
I'm going to say 75%.
That is incorrect, sir. We'll give Jeff a chance to steal. Jeff, do you know the answer?
90%.
27% is the number we are looking for.
According to who?
Dark matter. Einstein. All right, question number 3.
Equals MC squared my ass.
Listen, you ripped on me for my I hate Shakespeare. You obviously did not take an astronomy class.
You don't know the answer to any of this.
Actually, I do.
No, you don't.
Actually, I did.
Dark matter.
Actually, I did.
Mm.
All right.
Not no dark matter.
This is an easy one, Jeff. I think
dark
they're all easy.
Dark matter matters.
Jeff, how many planets are in our solar system?
9.
Oh, that's no longer correct.
They They dropped Pluto, so it's 8.
Pluto got bounced in 2006.
Which is wrong, but Jeff, you were sort of correct.
I never approved of them dropping
that. I agree with you.
In fact, in 2014, we may have hypothetically found another planet. We just can't prove it yet. There may be another 9th planet other than Pluto.
There's an asterisk on this one.
It's like 61.
Well, so far we have no correct answers. All right, Pete Shepard. Is it Pete's turn?
We got lame.
Yeah, right. It's my turn, yeah.
Pete, what is the largest planet in our solar system?
Oh, come on. You should have given me that one.
Jupiter.
Fact!
Boom!
Good job, Pete
Shepard.
It's the
only planet you can see. Right?
What's that?
You're up to a 2-0 lead, my friend.
I'm up 2. Am I up 2, Zip?
No.
I'm up 1.
Didn't you steal the solar system one?
No. I got it wrong.
No.
I think it's fixed.
All right, Jeff. What is the smallest planet in our solar system?
I'm going to say Mercury.
Yes!
Boom. Great job.
Now we've got a heated 1-1 tie.
It was Pluto. Was it not? Pluto doesn't exist anymore.
It was a close call.
Good job.
Pete Shepard.
Yes.
What has a gravitational pull so strong that even light cannot escape it?
A black hole!
Fact! Boom. Pete Shepard with a 2-1 lead!
Don't be going start with Star Trek on your ass. Don't you give me that softball stuff.
All right, Jeff, here we go. Your chance to tie.
Yeah.
Which NASA space flight was the last manned mission to the moon? We know Apollo 11 and Neil Armstrong and all that. We went to
Apollo 13.
No. Pete, do you know?
Basically the last
Apollo mission to go to the moon.
You
know it's got to be bigger than
15?
11. No.
13?
Jeff Nixon, 14? Do you know?
Apollo 18?
17 is the correct answer. 18 never happened.
That's right.
All right.
Wasn't there a movie about one and it was like they did a secret Apollo mission, and when they got to the planet, it was like prehistoric creatures on it.
Did not know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, Pete Shepard.
Yep.
This one's just for you.
Yep.
How many minutes was the shortest space flight ever? The reason I'm giving it to you is because Alan Shepard did it in 1961.
The shortest? So he like went up. Got out of the up the atmosphere and came back.
Yep.
You know, like when this is like when Han Solo did the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs or something like that.
How
5 hours.
No, sir. Jeff, do you know the answer? The shortest
24 hours.
15 minutes, gentlemen. 15 minutes.
Total chat. What do you mean?
He went up, just like you said. He went up, did this atmosphere, and came down.
So he probably was in a jet.
Climber.
He achieved an altitude of 115 miles above the ground. It took him 15 minutes, and then came down.
Well, he was probably in a jet, right?
It was in a rocket. It was our first space rocket that just kind of stuck its nose.
Why would they waste time and money doing that?
Because at the time, in 1961, Pete Shepard, that was the best we could do. We were just experimenting.
Going into space.
Yeah, the Russians were sending up all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, Sputnik.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, this is time for the final question. Jeff, right. Your chance to tie. What flavor ice cream did Baskin-Robbins release in 1969 to commemorate America's landing on the moon?
What flavor ice cream?
Yes. It's a big seller back then.
Don't go.
Yeah. Flavor ice cream. How long do I have? 2 seconds?
Yeah, we're late. Go ahead. Take a guess.
I have no clue.
Pete Shepard, take a guess.
Neil Armstrong.
Wrong, but I like your creativity. Jeff Nixon, you can close us out.
Rocky Road.
Lunar cheesecake is the answer we are looking for here.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I've never felt so stupid in my life after that.
Lunar cheesecake.
Jeff, stay on hold, Jeff. Thanks for playing. We'll take care of you, man. Thank you for playing.
Have a good one.
I appreciate that.
Fisherman Nat says, hey, Pete, jets can't fly in space due to the lack of oxygen. I don't know how you get half of these answers correct. Because I'm thinking, I understand that, but I'm thinking, is there a jet out there that could just kind of...
No.
Boom, like touch the sand, just come back down.
Wrong.
No, obviously I am.
Jeff Nixon, thank you for coming in.
Fisherman.
We'll look forward to your show on Sunday from 8 to 10. Yeah, you did get black hole.
A lot of things correct.
Very good. All right, Jeff Nixon, catch your show 8 to 10 Sunday mornings with Andy Scott. Play Gulf Southwest Florida. Thank you very much, man. Good luck to Bishop Rowe and the girls team this year. We'll be.
And your official pick is Koepka.
Brooks Koepka.
He did not waver. He said that the minute he walked in the door. All right, now we're late again. Coming up, we've got to make our
Jeff's
picks
fault.
On our 99.3 ESPN.com website, the Sheeman and Shepherd Fantasy Golf Game, plus more college football chit-chat. Stay with us. Sheeman and Shepherd, 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.